you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
Welcome to Inclusion Catalyst. We invite diversity leaders to the table to deconstruct complex social justice issues and showcase the best inclusion practices in our workplaces and our communities.
Welcome to this podcast on Inclusion Catalyst. I'm your guest host, Chuck Shelton, founder and CEO of Great Heart Consulting. This is the third in a series of four podcasts where we have been discussing the core skills of inclusive leaders, including owning your story, listening to build trust, seeking and giving feedback courageously, and respecting individuality and building belonging. I'm talking with thought leaders from both the corporate and nonprofit sectors to expand our understanding of what it means to be an inclusive leader. Today on the show, we are excited to have Greg Gale, a white guy like me, who has spent more than 25 years leading DEI change initiatives in Fortune 100 and nonprofit organizations. Greg's work has largely focused on rolling out enterprise-wide inclusive leadership programming, with a particular emphasis on engaging men in allyship work. Greg recently completed a leadership role at Liberty Mutual Insurance, where he spent 7 years developing inclusive leaders and challenging his peers to take greater accountability for their privilege and the actions they could take to create a more inclusive and equitable culture. Greg, it is so great to have you join us today.
It's great to be here, Chuck. Thank you so much.
We've had the chance to have conversations like this for many years, and it's a real joy to have you on the show today. So let's jump in. We're talking about listening to build trust as an inclusive leader. So let's start with a bit of your story. Tell us about how and when inclusive leadership became important to you and why it matters in your career today.
Well, Chuck, you know, I think you and I have not, maybe haven't heard this story, but when I was in my college years, I actually worked in a Navajo rights campaign in Arizona. And, you know, prior to that, I'd been a leader in sports and clubs like many young people, where I think I wasn't the most inclusive leader. And when I worked with the Navajo folks, I realized that we wouldn't be successful unless we listened. And it really helped me broaden my view that, you know, we've got to have more listening to understand how to find a way forward together.
So, yeah, you're right. We haven't talked about this because I have a bit of a background with the Navajo Nation myself with some consulting work. And a part of that was with a mix of Native American tribes, and the Navajo and the Mohawk were both in the network. And I was so taken by that experience in terms of how that, like, the ethnic expression of those cultures was so powerfully different. You know, the Mohawk were from the Northeast. They were from like a cold place and they were tough. And the Navajo from a warm place, it was calmer and easier. What was it like for you to go from being a Massachusetts raised, person to working and listening and learning with people from the Navajo Nation?
Yeah, what was interesting was, you know, I saw different people from around the U.S. trying to be supportive of the Navajo leadership and elders. And I did see approaches that I considered to be a little more like, oh, I've got the solution. Let me do it to you. Yeah. And I saw how that landed for Native people. And I thought to myself, even at a very young age, you know, that doesn't seem like we're going to be that effective if we're not truly understanding what's needed or wanted from us. So I realized how much it set a foundation for me. And I sort of never turned back from that.
I like both times you talked about your observation of how attending to the dynamics between us, it needs to be viewed through the lens of effectiveness. Like, how's it going to work? And I appreciate the practicality of that. And it's complicated because how cultures and individuals show up in them and how we differ, that's a really good accountability. It's like, let's not just be together. Let's think about where we're going and what we're getting done together.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that. So as we think about listening in the context of diversity, equity, inclusion, what makes listening across differences challenging and difficult? And how do you know when listening is working when diversity is present?
Yeah, well, I was thinking, Chuck, about this and how the step number one to me, what makes it difficult is the need to slow down and to ask and to take in what I hear. Because at the pace we all move, especially in institutional life, in your leadership role, it can be easy just to be crashing and cascading forward. So to me, just the first step is, can I slow down? Can I truly listen and take in what someone's saying? So you know, that's step one. I don't know if that's been your experience, but it can be easy to be sort of on a, just hurtling forward and not really having the time to listen.
I like the practicality. And one of the ways I think about that, and just kind of even how my body is a part of listening, is, am I on the balls of my feet or am I on my heels? And sometimes leaning in, that so much of leadership work and so much of being present, even with differences in view, makes me feel like I need to be on the balls of my feet. And when I hear you say that, it makes me think, well, sometimes I actually really need to kind of not lean back to disengage, but to lean back to discipline my own attitude about being present.
Oh, I love that, Chuck. I love it. Because what I notice is once I do that, I can actually listen and take in information. Then I have to think about step two is sort of, oh, I'm interacting with someone who has a different point of view from me. Here comes some of my unconscious or conscious biases about what I'm hearing. And so how do I work with those to stay open versus think, oh, I'm listening for the way that aligns to how I see this, or the one right way that I believe. So, you know, that ability to listen and also say, ah, wow, look how I'm reacting in here. Not how I want to do this. I want to actually listen to understand.
It almost like shines a light on a verb like listening that we use so much and we clearly take for granted. It's like way more of an active verb than even what we've like been taught about. It's our ears and our positive, you know, facial countenance. Because like you, what you're talking about is like you're listening to yourself while you're listening to others. Mm. You're how to be present. And
yes.
Then, I mean, I think of an African-American client of mine who recently unpacked the layers of conversations she's having with herself in a moment in a meeting or in terms of how she's expected. Is she going to speak up? What tone of voice is she going to use? What's her face looking like when she's listening? And I thought, you know, wow, if we liken it to operating speeds in a computer, I'm like at 256 and she's like at megs. I mean, like she's listening and processing at such a high level. And that was, I mean, I go the speed I go, but it also made me think even my own listening and the way I process is impacted by my privilege and, you know, by the life that I live in. And that's sobering. Because I really want to listen and I see the impact of it. And I'm not sure that I'm like I said, I'm operating even in those moments like people who've had to navigate so much more.
Wow, Chuck, you know what I'm realizing as we talk is that, you know, inclusive leadership is self-aware leadership. Because sometimes with leaders, I've had to say, there's good news and bad news here. One is you may have to slow down and start to be more aware than you've ever been of other people and how they're taking you in. But there's a great gift in that because without that, you are just sort of hurtling forward. So I really like to think about growing two skills, you know, understanding of self and then understanding of others to be effective together.
I think that's such a dynamic way to think about the listening side of listenability trust, because it's as dynamic and challenging it is to make sure that we're trying to receive what people are saying to us, which is that essential idea or one essential idea of communication. It's also embodying in the way we're attending and mindful in that moment. Am I present enough to not only make sure I am giving my best to hearing what's coming my way to minimize the gap between intent and impact? And as part of doing that, am I owning like the lenses I am operating with? By the way, I'm judging how they look, how they talk.
Exactly.
You know, I learned a lot. I definitely got to practice that a lot when I worked with refugees whose English was often so challenged. And I don't think I was making negative judgments about intelligence or anything horrible like that. But there, I noticed early in my experience with spending a lot of time every day, because that was the new part of that learning for me with people who were speaking English as a second or third or fourth language, that I wasn't very patient. And I would like be, instead of acknowledging the bias that was operating in that moment, I was just being in the bias of saying, well, why don't they say that more clearly, or why don't they know that word? Or so, you know, we on so many dimensions of difference and identity, we get to wander into this territory. And even now, when we're on camera way more than we're in person, all of it still operates, I think.
Exactly. You know, a funny one I was thinking about was, given, you know, I didn't grow up as someone with, you know, access to technology as a primary way of solving problems. Like, very often my ability to listen to younger generation staff who want to solve a problem in a way that I wouldn't have known to do it or wanted to do it on technology really had, you know, I had the power to say, no, we're going to do it my way. But listening often meant like, all right, tell me more about what this could look like or how we would accomplish this in this way you're describing. So it's just sort of, you know, I think these changes around us, whether it's culture, technology, they're constant. And the ability to listen across that difference and take something in of value is critical for leadership.
That's a really interesting insight in terms of technology. I think one of the things I've struggled at the age I am, and for sure technology is not as native to me as many of people on my team and our clients. There are times when we'll be talking, and because you can go online and start searching for solutions or resources while other people are talking, mm-hmm. that there's sometimes that tendency and that availability of technology can actually get in the way of listening. Because we've like moved to Google it, you know. So that's interesting. It can cut both ways, and we're kind of always in the soup, aren't we?
You know, absolutely,
one way or the other. Well, that's I love the chance to dig into a word like listening that we so take for granted and find out, wow, there's probably way more going on there. There could be for us as inclusive leaders.
Exactly.
On the trust side of this equation, we like to connect listening and trust. At Great Heart, we define trust as a making and keeping of promises over time and across difference. So in your experience, why is trust so vital for inclusive leaders, and what happens when we break it?
Well, first, I love that definition, Chuck, of doing this over time, building trust over time, because it is a process, that's for sure. And it's you got to invest to sort of make it real. So to me, you know, the reason I have found it so vital in my own career is that I really think about it very simply. Like, what I like to feel is that people have my back, and I think people like to feel I have their back. And so I think of that as sort of almost a primal way that we know, you know, this person's going to be there when things go well or when they don't, and we can trust each other to support and be behind each other in these things when, you know, the ups and downs of any environment or work that we're doing together. And I think when people don't have that, they're often highly guarded. I know I am. If I don't trust someone as my back, I think my guard is up. And I absolutely have seen with teams I've led that if people are holding back out of self-preservation or concern for failing, they can't contribute from the fullness of who they are.
I'm probably not surprised that a conversation between you and me would kind of lean in the direction of mindfulness. But I'm struck by the way you use the word primal. I really like that word because it's kind of like a word like visceral and intuitive, and you kind of, you know it when you see it. And there is an element of that for sure with trust. And we might want to architect it and dig around in it to understand it, which isn't fine. And there's when you add in differences in identity between us as colleagues or with family or customers or whoever the relationship is, and then you face up to the reality of that trust is earned, you know, promise kept by promise kept. And when it breaks, it can break in a moment. And it's so hard to recover.
Yes.
That it's like, it's so worth attending to to that primal, you know, when you feel it. Mm-hmm. And at the skill level, you know, that's why I like connecting it to listening. Because like some of the things that we talked about in terms of how we attend and are present with one another, when it's across difference and we're managing the internal part of listening, like you were describing, we actually have a chance to not do the stupid bias stuff that we're all at risk for. And the world is giving us so many models for right now. And B, it gives us a chance to really, from our side, minimize a gap between intent and impact, which is
exactly
which is often the, you know, the thing that the thing that gets so much pain and risk, you know, going in relationships.
Yes. You know, Chuck, I was thinking about, you know, that I've had people say to me, I'll say this, makes you feel good, also a little bit sad. I've had people of color, women, people of different sexual orientations say, you know, you're the first straight white man I've ever trusted and let in to know me fully.
Yeah.
And I always feel like, oh, that's great. And then I think, oh, shoot, that should not be someone's experience if they've had multiple managers or been engaged in, you know, multicultural teams over time. But I think it's partly because it is effortful and it requires a lot of what you and I are talking about. You really have to commit to it to get better at it. And I think maybe just people don't know how important it really is to be able to accomplish work and have relationships if you don't invest.
I mean, it's interesting because we all know what trust looks like. We know when we have it in any relationship, right? Whether it's personal or professional. What's, like you said, so sobering is that there are so many among us who have rarely, if ever, been able to develop relationships where we are making and keeping promise together across differences like race or gender or other aspects of identity. It's such a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I know in ally work, you and I have both experienced and seen how that starts to, we become kind of the antidote to some of that because we start coming alongside people in a way that they judge to be truly useful.
Yes. And,
you know, for us as white Americans, I'd certainly say we've never had this is the best chance we've ever had, you know, to disrupt that kind of storyline and keep showing up when race is in view, or for us as men with gender in view, or us as Americans when we're talking about global work. However the construct of advantage and disadvantage is put together around that aspect of identity, wow, when we show up in a way that's for the other and they feel it and they know we're for them, like you were describing, it may be tragic and sad that they haven't experienced it more, but to some degree, it makes it all even the more powerful when they do experience it now.
Exactly. And you know, Chuck, it's funny because one of the things I like to say to other men who look like me, white men in leadership roles, managers, is that it can sound like a whole heck of a lot of effort with a lot of risk, like, oh no, you make a mistake, you're done. It's, to me, been one of the most invigorating and enriching parts of my career and life to expand the number and types of people I work with, even though it's not easy, because I continue to make mistakes and have to keep learning. But I sometimes think there's not enough, like you and I know that there's a richness to this that people can't understand until they've engaged it. But it's part of the missing story, I think.
So maybe one way we frame listen to build trust is in an enlightened self-interest. It's the opportunity. It's a way to think about a skill that will bring us such unexpected learning and probably a pretty big dose of humility, but also a confidence. Like you said, we aren't going to get it right all the time. We're going to make mistakes. And so many of us are fearful of saying the wrong thing so we don't say anything, or
exactly, you know,
standing up when a guy does something inappropriate and say, you know, I'm not comfortable with that, or I think that's inappropriate, or let's listen to our colleague who identifies as female because I think we missed what she was saying, or whatever. You know, we got to find our courage to listen, to build trust. And when we do, the what comes to us is so powerful. Well, on that same note, then, on the opportunity side, I'd love to hear about a time that comes to mind for when listening to build trust really made a powerful impact in a situation, you know, when DEI was on the table.
Yeah. Well, I've been thinking about this, Chuck, over my fairly long career now, and I was thinking about something that your listeners have access to called the Skills for Inclusion. It's now an 11-part video miniseries on a series of guidelines for communication across difference that we built, that I built with a team. It's now available for all to use in their organizations. And the reason I choose it is that we wanted to share really strong content that we worked with a vendor, Visions Incorporated, on. And we wanted it to come out in a fresh way. And it was really like a new territory for all of us. We had a highly diverse team. We had intense deadlines. a desire for a lot of creativity to get outside the box, and the need to really listen to each other. And so I think what I felt good about was I knew we had to assemble people with many points of view, and I knew we had to find a way to embolden everybody to offer their greatest idea and then chase things down with their greatest strength. If you were a great project manager, please help land this. And the outcome, you know, was a Telly award-winning series that people here can look at and use. So I think for me, when there's an opportunity to build something with a team creatively, and it's a multidimensional team, it was very exciting to do that.
Yeah, I like that. I like the connection to creativity too. Sometimes the DEI space sounds like it's a slog through collaboration, you know, and like you have to pay a price to do it. And like we were saying, the positive upside and the way it connects to innovation and creativity is quite exciting. How would people access that resource, Greg?
Yeah, Chuck. If people Google inclusion in action, it's distributed by Sunshower Learning. They'll be able to find the resource.
Cool. Well, I knowing what I know a little bit about that series and the impact it had in the organization, it's a real success story and so practical in terms of how we do this together. That's one of the great questions we certainly hear in our work is how do I do it? And my recollection of that resource is it pretty much focuses on and maybe not how not to do it too, but
yes.
on the upside. So Greg, we've been talking about the upside of listening to build trust. When trust breaks, tough things happen. What's been your experience around the breaking of trust? How does it happen and how do we recover?
Yeah, Chuck, I would say unless you're a very unusual human being, you will have breaks in trust. So plan for it. Don't give up when there is one. So when I have breaks in trust, I'm not going to say when I had in the past because they're always, you know, I'm always at risk for them. I really think I've learned to try to understand the break. Like, how was it felt? Why was it felt? Even if I believe maybe it shouldn't have been felt. So to me, you know, stopping to say, oh, there's been a break. What was it? And then literally trying to just be quiet and listen and not shame yourself, not blame that person or explain away what happened.
I really like that message, that guideline of not shaming yourself. Cause I know when I've made mistakes, even when I didn't know what they were, and I can see that I've damaged a relationship or I just didn't do well in a conversation. The tendency I certainly see in myself is to rise in self-defense, and that almost always makes it worse.
Yes.
And when a difference is involved and trust that is so precious, a resource, an asset to me as a leader, as an inclusive leader, is at risk or past being at risk and I've got a mess on my hands. Maybe that same language we were talking about in terms of that attitude of how do we attend to the other person and try and one of the words I think of is be curious, not in a voyeuristic way, but curious in a caring way about what's happening. Yeah. And then I think one of the things that I've learned around the conflict that comes from the breaking of trust is the power of having some guidelines about how we deal with conflict ahead of time, preferably, but also being able to disengage with the commitment to re-engage.
Yes.
Because there are times where things get difficult and painful. And if the intent impact gap has opened up and on the impact side that I appear to have created, there's hurt that I truly don't understand and they may not want to share it. They just may, it may be a moment of brokenness in the relationship without demanding that somebody, you know, fess up to what bad thing I've done in their direction. Sometimes you need some space. And sometimes I need this space to say, let's take a break here, or let's let this settle and make sure we come back to talk about this, because it's recovering trust, man, that's hard to do. It's not easy to build and it certainly takes time. Breaking trust can happen in such unexpected ways and speeds, and that can't keep us from doing it. And fear of broken trust can't keep us from making trust. But man, it's a skill set to navigate.
Yeah, what I like what you're saying, Chuck, is that sometimes if we feel like, oh no, I must resolve this right now, we either start to sort of self-immolate and punish ourselves, which can throw the other person starts to take care of us. Uh-oh, that's not what I want.
Right.
we can start to say, you know, I didn't mean it because I'm a good guy. That doesn't work very well. So I like your counsel there to sort of take it in, feel the feelings and take some time and come back with a response that says, I'm here to repair the trust and keep moving. How can we do that?
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I certainly have watched in the last 2 years in this era of racial reckoning in the States that to build relationships of trust across a difference like race, and then to live together into moments where maybe somebody else breaks trust or a situation in society, you know, is causing someone to suffer again, that those moments of how we attend and care for people when relationships and trust is broken are some of the most powerful moments for what this can become.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, Chuck. It's a fundamental skill and contribution that we all can make to each other and have to do.
Yeah, and to your point earlier about the sobering and kind of wonderful aspect of being trusted by people who don't necessarily have a lot of experience in trusting people who look like you and me, that makes it so precious. And I think all of us as leaders across with humans, not just a particular identity points, know that when our teams trust us, that the kind of impact that it has on productivity and creativity and retention. And I mean, it's powerful at a lot of levels. And when it breaks, those are crucial moments of and things are either going to get back on the road to recovery or they're not.
Exactly.
So a final ask, since the inclusion catalyst idea is to talk about how does this work generate difference in the organization? When we think about listening to build trust and the impact that we can have as leaders, as inclusive leaders, what happens when we, as inclusive leaders, listen to build trust?
Well, I feel like, Chuck, you and I have been talking about it here, and maybe I'll just summarize. I think what happens is we enrich our own lives and learning. We help others feel seen and heard, and we produce better outcomes. Whether you're working in healthcare, whether you're working in industry, I believe those outcomes are enriched when people can gather as many points of view as possible to sort of come to the best solution.
Yeah, it strikes me that the things that can sometimes get called soft skills, one, are some of the hardest things to learn how to do and are actually methods for producing results that we can't get any other way. And I think when we think about the connection between listening and trust and how it becomes a skill in our toolkit as leaders and how it requires to do it well, for it to show up in our behavior interpersonally and to show up in the internal conversations that we need to be having for ourselves. It's not so easy, it's hard to do, but also it produces results and it connects to the relationships we have with people we work with, to the way our team works together, to the way we listen to our customers. And if there was ever a time when inclusive leaders needed to attend to those things, the time is now. So last question, Greg, how can people connect with you online?
Well, before I answer that, Chuck, I just want to say a colleague once taught me a great line. You know, she said, let's improve relationships to improve results. And it's that link between the soft skill and the hard outcome. And it's always stuck with me because people often think, it's one or the other. I've either got to do results or do relationships. And it's a both and, as you and I know. So for people to reach out to me, I'm on LinkedIn, love to connect with people there. My name's Greg Gale, as you mentioned, or my email, which is gregddgale@gmail.com.
And Gale is spelled G-A-L-E?
Yes.
And Greg is spelled like you expect it to be.
G-R-E-G-D-Gale, G-L-E.
Greg, thanks so much. Well, so this brings us to the end of this episode. I'm so grateful for you, Greg, joining us in this honest and great-hearted conversation. Thanks to our listeners for spending this time with us. We hope that you heard something of value and that it helps you to lead more inclusively. As always, thanks for listening to Inclusion Catalyst.
you can bring your stories to the table as a partner and a host on the Inclusion Catalyst podcast. Visit inclusioncatalyst.com and click the link that says join us as a guest host.
And that's it for this episode of Inclusion Catalyst. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues.